He's Ty.
Hello, podcast fans.
It's Wildcat Minute, where we talk about High School Musical 3, senior year, 1 minute at a time. I'm Condra.
And I'm Tyler.
And today we're talking about minute 76 of High School Musical 3, senior year. Minute 76 starts out with Troy singing To Find What You're Here For as he enters the gym, and ends with him singing It's Spinning Faster whilst the room spins.
Whoa. Spinning room. What is this, Inception? Christopher Nolan's got nothing on Kenny Ortega, okay?
Heck yeah. He did it first. Christopher Nolan stole. Come at
Recent
me.
Recent Oscar winner Christopher Nolan.
I would be curious. Christopher Nolan.
Because I don't know if they did the, did they do a big rotating hallway like they did in Inception?
Yeah. So. Actually, I have fun facts about this set. I was going to save them for next week because it's, yeah.
I guess maybe they didn't shoot a whole sequence in the spinning hallway set, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt levitating through a hallway. Like, it's a little less special effects driven and more just like a visual gag. And not even a gag. It's because it's not a joke. It's like a good bit of visuals, but that's at the end of the minute. And we're not there yet.
We've got
plenty of other visual gags to talk about.
This visuals aplenty in this here minute of High School Musical 3 senior year.
We're seeing things. We're hearing things. Oh boy. What more could movie making have to offer?
Smelling things.
I would love High School Musical smell-o-vision.
Would it be like the rubber of the balls? Sweat? Gym socks? There's lots of options.
I guess
here.
High School Musical 2 would be the best for smell-o-vision because
absolutely.
That has the most locations.
The pool, chlorine, you've got your nice freshly trimmed grass.
You got the kitchen.
The kitchen, you got the dining experience, you got the cheeseburger.
I'm not smelling Swiss. This doesn't smell like Swiss. Smells like cheddar.
So Troy enters. There's a bit of a dreamlike cut here in that we know there's a little more between the locker room and where he is in the gym. But we cut to near the basketball court in the gym. And
it's funny that you mentioned dreams, because Troy might as well be singing, Oh My Life, It's Changing Every Day in every possible way. Cranberries.
Yeah. Dreams. Yeah. Sorry, it took me a sec. We did linger last minute, dreams this minute.
I just wanted to tie it all together. And oh, my dreams, it's never quite as it seems, Condra. And that's what's going on in this minute is what's going on is maybe not what it seems. Mm-hmm. Condra's looking at her phone and with an agape mouth. And I don't know if it's something podcast relevant or not.
It's not. It's not.
That's fine. We're leaving it in.
Weezer just announced a tour with Flaming Lips and Dinosaur Jr. in which they're playing the full Blue album.
Good for them. They've already done that shtick.
But like, they've...
I want to see Flaming Lips perform all of the Blue album. That I would watch.
Sorry. So Troy starts singing To Find What You're Here For, Open Another Door. But I'm not sure anymore. It's just so hard.
It is just so hard, Troy.
Indeed, I agree with
that sentiment.
Buddy, it is hard.
And the door line obviously being referenced to like, hey, doors closed, echoes filling soul. But if you open another door, then the echoes can fill that other hole that you've just opened.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, is like there's some where like the phrasing with when one door closes, another one opens. There's like little agency in that. But like, to find what you're here for, open another door. There is some sense of agency in like the Troy or the person he is singing about is doing the opening and it's not fate.
And I think that's a good point. If we could sort of, in the same way that people have amended the golden rule.
Yeah.
Treat others as they deserve to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
People, you could amend the, I guess people say when God closes a door. But like when one door closes, another door unlocks, meaning you have to
still
either
open it
find
yourself.
The door or choose to open it.
Yeah.
But not every door is always locked.
No. I still like the windows door, sliding door kind of thing. That concept of like self-reflection, empathy, building.
Windows, doors, and mirrors are somehow.
Yeah, some and sliding doors. Where it's,
These metaphors all get mixed up and usually are used in like a professional development or like
education,
loosely thrown
especially.
Together, like training circumstance, which are never quite as effective as the people who are implementing them think they are. But it is a useful
tool. In the book world, I have found it to be helpful when explaining it to people. But even though Troy's got the agency to open another door, he doesn't know if he wants to. Like, there's still that, I gotta do it, and it's hard, and do I want to?
You can do it, gotta play, Troy. You can do it, hip-hop hooray. Anyway.
I was like, where's this one going?
You're right. It's a little generic sounding, but the internal turmoil being just, there are things laid out in front of me and I don't know what to do right now. Right now I'm just stewing in it. Like, that's a perfectly fine place to be at.
Yeah. And then the voices in his head tell him they know best. Got me on the edge. They're pushing. They're pushing.
If we look up in the background of this, and this is sort of where the scene progresses to, Troy in his anguish looks up at the rafters.
Yeah, and his jersey is hanging there along with Chad and four other past ballers.
Yes, so it raised the question for me at first, like, is Troy's number like already retired, or like, is he already like sort of enshrined as an eternal Wildcat up in these rafters? Or the other possibility was, these are just the seniors whom they have hung the jerseys of.
It is not.
If we zoom out, we see that the first jersey all the way on the right, because Troy's is all the way on the left, first jersey on the right is Bolton, but it's number 21.
Yeah. And also, we know Jason and Zeke's last names, Cross and Baylor, respectively, and neither of them are represented up there. So these are presumably retired numbers.
Yeah, so his dad's number is retired up there, and his number is retired up there, which is kind of cool. Like, I could imagine, like, being a student, like, many years later, is like, why are there two Boltons up there? Was it, like, the same guy, or was that two different guys? Oh, it was, like, a father and a son that weren't even, like, brothers or something?
Yeah.
Oh, like, that's kind of cool, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, for the thing for, like, retiring numbers in a high school, the memory of high schools doesn't work in the same way as, like, retiring a professional sports number, because you're dealing with generational memory that is very short.
Yeah, it's a four-year thing, and this is not, like, an all-time great basketball player. Like, this isn't, like, oh, Michael Jordan went to this high school, or, oh, like, we had an All-American wrestler at this high school. Like,
yeah.
Troy might be All-State. Like, he might have led the team to two championships, but that's not like, oh, this name literally goes down in the history books.
Yeah.
It's not nowhere outside of this school. And usually with, like, a retired number set up, that number needs to mean something to people outside of the individual circumstances, a little bit at least.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why it just, and for him to have it retired before he's graduated also feels weird.
Yeah, that's wild.
And Chad. Like, I'm sorry, but what did Chad do to warrant this? Like, Troy has been the MVP. He was captain starting his sophomore year of the VAR. Like,
I mean, it's possible that Troy stuck his neck out for Chad to also get this honor. Like, hey, this was a team effort through and through, meaning the two of us, not all five people on the court.
Yeah, no. Yeah, at first I was like, oh, is this the starting lineup of the championship team this year? And then I was like, no, there are six.
We also didn't point out that one of the jerseys hanging up from the rafters is white while the other ones are red, which is like, why did they change the pattern? Hello?
Yeah. And that one is Natrine. I did write down the names of them. None of them jumped out as, like, anyone connected to the movie as like Easter eggs.
Yeah, that seems fine. They just come up with some random names. But yeah, it's weird for there to be like two retired numbers in the same class. It like if you're going to retire like a high schooler's jersey number, which we've already established, like means that they're probably an all-time elite player in their sport.
Yeah.
In which case, it's probably just happenstance that they happened to go to your high school.
Mm-hmm. Or if they got recruited, you are a private school or have something else going for you and you're not just East High of Albuquerque, New Mexico kind of thing. Like, there's little intention to this school.
I guess there's a way to do it that it doesn't feel so like, hey, this is your retired jersey, like they do in the big sports. Like, if there were like pictures of the all-time greats, like on the walls of the gymnasium.
Or like near the trophy case, they had like the MVPs or
even if they had like real game jerseys that were like hung like as places of notoriety, but like from the rafters of the gym, like that is a very specific context that just feels like a bit much for a high school player.
Indeed.
Okay, moving on. Oh, did you find it interesting that Mike Bolton was number 21
and Troy's
number 14, and that's like multiples of seven? I don't know, like,
are we gonna go mathing there? Yeah, I did notice that as well, and my brain did a similar thing, but then I was like, it's probably coincidence.
It'd be cool if Troy was 12, like the opposite of his father.
Wow. I'm sure Mr. Bolton's number came well after Troy's. So in terms of like movie planning, so I did think it was very funny that there was a ghost cheer as we zoomed in on Troy's jersey. The ghosts were cheering for him.
Yeah, the ghosts in his mind of the people who once inhabited this hallowed gymnasium cheering him on. They are no longer here, but he can still remember what it was like to be adored by screaming fans. And then the guitar kicks in.
Yeah. And it starts raining basketballs.
We get some shredding guitar and yeah, the basketballs rain. And I mean, it's pretty dope. Like,
yeah, no, I think it's a ton of fun. Like it picks up and I like how the balls are neatly not falling around Troy until the first one does that he catches.
Yeah, I mean, the special effect of it is cool. And there's a couple different things going on. One, we are hearing the sound of basketballs suddenly hitting the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But one, it's not like real life, obviously, because that would be like an extremely loud sound.
Yeah.
If 100 basketballs all of a sudden fell at the same time in the gymnasium from the ceiling. And obviously, like, there's no rigging going on. These are just like sort of CGI basketballs falling.
Well, like some green of them, screen yeah.
type setup. And then the yeah. ones that Troy directly interacts with, as in he picks up
or kicks or punches.
But I think the ones that he kicks and punches aren't real. I think he kicks and punches the air and then they CGI those balls in.
Oh, man. Is my world shook?
I couldn't tell exactly, but that seemed like it would be too weird to like, unless, except for the ball that he specifically catches.
There's the one he catches and then the one, he does a crossover and he would need, that was a second ball and he would need a, like, that's a very hard thing to mime and I think he would need a ball for that.
Yeah, no, the ones he's holding in his hands, he's definitely holding and that you can definitely choreograph. But the idea of like slightly launching a ball in his vicinity next to him that he can perfectly time a kick of, like, does not seem like something they would have literally done. They would have just said, like, hey, do a kick and we'll just make it look like you kicked one of the basketballs. That was my thought on it. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'd like to think Troy Bolton has more integrity. I mean, they put a piano in the pool. So anything's possible.
I think the idea of like literally having a room full of bouncing basketballs
would have been very
just
loud.
Been impossible to shoot in.
Or it's a one take kind of thing. Like we have all the choreo.
oh, they definitely didn't have all these balls bouncing in the room because there's no way to predict which balls are going to bounce into the path of the frame. Most of these balls were certainly CGI, except for the ones that he's interacting with. But they might have done it green screen. So they might have done a shot of a bunch of balls bouncing mm-hmm. in the gym and then just, you know, superimposed Troy Bolton in the middle of it. So, like, it could have been a real effect, but it wasn't all shot at the same time.
Yeah. I could believe that. Like, that seems more plausible for this type of film. I just don't see them CGIing a bunch of basketballs.
Troy sings, "The ball's in my hands. This time it's man to man.
I'm driving, fighting inside of a world that's upside down.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where Lin-Manuel Miranda got his inspiration.
Yep. Yep.
We wouldn't have Hamilton if it weren't for High School Musical 3, folks.
There we are. I think all of Troy's little dancing that he's doing while he's singing these very plain words are very funny. Like, he's doing a crossover, he's doing a kick and a punch, and, like, he grabs a ball and, like, sticks it on the ground, and then the ball's in his hand, quite literally. I got a kick out of, like, tacky choreography is kind of why I love these movies so much.
And it's reminiscent of Get Your Head in the Game.
Absolutely.
But it's an elevation of it, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the same spot. Well, no, not technically the same spot as Get Your Head in the Game because they were in a practice gym, but it feels very much like the same.
And the stuff about the ball being in his hands and having to go man to man, like, there is, like, this element of, like, okay, I've got to take control of my own life. And the same thing with the open another door. But the song hasn't quite gotten to the, like, hey, the world around me is all messed up and I'm getting all these mixed messages, but I know what to do. Like,
yeah, he hasn't finished the journey yet. Yeah. But the world does, not only is it raining basketballs, but the hall starts spinning.
Yes, and we see him sort of doing the, like, hey, I'm walking up the side as it's spinning so that he stays upright in the middle.
Yeah.
Which is a classic effect. It works.
Yeah.
I mean, we only see, like, 4 seconds of it in this. So.
Yeah. But we'll leave more talking of that for next time. But just mentioning that it does start here, because that's pretty iconic from this song, as it should be.
The whole 80s, like, shredding guitar, it's going well so far. I wouldn't say that Zach's vocals are, like, quite hitting, like, a notable, like, tone. Like, he's not doing a Van Halen or an AC/DC, like,
voice, glad,
obviously.
Because I think that would make it worse.
And I think the idea that they went for, like, an 80s rocker song is interesting because part of what makes Bet On It so iconic is it is so of its time.
Yeah.
It feels like a boy band song. It feels like an early 2000s pop song. And we had this with The Boys Are Back, too, mm-hmm. in this movie, where it's like, oh, this feels like a boy band song, and it's doing exactly what it's trying to do. And then in the last song, we walk away, we're like, oh, this is a cool, like,
gospel-y,
like 70s soul type song. And now they're going with, like, another genre thing, but I don't know if it's going to pull it off yet.
We will find out as it progresses.
Right. There's doing what you were trying to do, and then there's doing what you're trying to do so well that it's impressive. Like Domino's Pizza. Like, they want to be a cheap pizza chain, and they achieve that. But they could impress you with what they were doing and, like, make pizzas that you're like, oh, like, this is cheap pizza, and it's delicious, and makes me feel satisfied. And that's not always going to be the case for something that is doing what it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very small distinction I'm making, I guess.
Sure. That's all I got for this here minute.
Yeah, I think the rain of basketballs probably goes down as one of the most impressive, if not memorable, shots in a High School Musical movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do watch movies sometimes just for the pleasure of saying, wow, that is a visual that I never would have gotten the opportunity to see. And usually you have to watch, like, horror movies or genre movies to get mm-hmm. things like that. But musicals are another type of genre movie where you're like, oh, I'm so glad that someone creative came up with this visual idea because we get to deliver on it.
Yeah.
All right. So we're ready for the segment?
Indeed.
It's time for the DCOM of the week. Cue the music. And we're here. Okay. Condra, I'm just going to have you guess the plot of a movie, and then maybe later on we could talk about the sort of studio background production setup that this movie and other movies of its ilk come from. But Condra, you know about these Tinkerbell movies?
Yeah, I do.
Do you know how many of them there are?
I think we're up to, is it 15?
Sadly, no, and you're not quite close either.
Is it six or seven then?
Yeah, there are six feature lengths, and then a couple. One of them's a 30-minute short.
Okay, I was like, it's either so
there's like seven,
or it's like seven, and I think I'm confusing it with Land Before Time, to be honest, which is 14.
Yeah, six feature lengths, and there's a seventh that's a 30-minute, and then there's one like 6-minute short. Then all right, Well, I was going to have you guess the plot of the last of the six.
Okay.
Because I like this idea of like jumping into the last of a fantasy series with its own inherent lore could be interesting.
Yeah. So this past year, 2023 Halloween, we all picked a day that we were going to do like a library-wide dress up, and Pixie Hollow was determined to be the theme for the year. I was not available to dress up that day because I had to work at my other job that does not allow dress up. So, which was a bummer, but I was offered the Pirate Fairy.
Okay, so you know a little bit of the backstory here.
Yeah, I do.
Do you know what the sixth film is?
No.
Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast?
All right. The Never Beast sounds familiar from the books. Because that's the other thing is I am slightly familiar of all the books because of shelf reading in the children's room.
All right. So background on the Tinkerbell movie series. The first one came out in 2008.
Hollow. Yeah.
And yeah, there's this sort of Pixie Hollow lore where Tinkerbell exists outside of the realm of Peter Pan and Wendy. And
well, it's both inside and outside because canonically in the movies, she goes off to like where all the other pixies are, and like you have to like Peter Pan lore more broadly has like fairies as like there's a multiple of them. But all of the fairies in this Pixie Hollow all have, like, certain things. They're kind of like the trolls or the Smurfs, where they're all, like, there's a painting fairy and
most of them are, like,
an animal fairy.
Elemental themed, like, there's a water fairy and stuff like that. But Tinkerbell, yes, specifically is a tinkerer in the sense that she has these sort of, like, tech background, I guess. Tinkerbell is a woman in STEM. I guess, yeah, in the first 2008 one, she does, like, fix a toy that is revealed to be Wendy's or something. But part of the history of making these movies was that they were never quite able to, like, prequelize it to, like, connect to Peter Pan. Like, all of the Tinkerbell movies exist outside of the, like, canon of
Peter
and Captain Hook and stuff like that. The first one that originally came out in 2008 was supposed to be like that, and then story rewrites, John Lasseter involvement, mess ups at the Disney Toons studio production branch, which is what we'll talk about some other time. Made it like a rewrite. So it was originally supposed to come out in 2007. And then they kept making these Pixie Hollow type movies.
You could meet a bunch of them in the parks for a while. They had a Tinkerbell like meet and greet area.
Actually, none of them got theatrical releases. Not even the first one. They were all direct to DVD.
Yep.
Some of them got theatrical releases in other countries, but not in America.
Yeah.
And the first movie garnered quite the impressive cast, including Mae Whitman as Tinkerbell, Lucy Liu as Silver Mist, Kristen Chenoweth as Rosetta, Raven Simone as Iridessa, America Ferrera as Fawn, and Angelica Houston as Queen Clarion. Ooh, and there's a Jesse McCartney tucked away back there, too.
Now, nice.
Do you want to guess how many of those people have remained for the sixth installment?
None of them. Zero. One.
Incorrect, actually.
One.
Incorrect. No, several.
Really?
We have retained Mae Whitman and Lucy Liu and Raven Simone and Angelica Houston. We lost Christian Chenoweth and America Ferrera, I guess.
Yeah. Must have been a decent enough paycheck then.
I mean, it's voiceover work. It is what it is.
Yeah.
The sixth film, we gain a Rosario Dawson voice. Nice. And depending on if you were in Britain or America, you either got Mel B or Danai Gurira, which is...
wild.
An interesting, like, I don't know why you went in two different directions, but, you know, a Spice and a Black Panther actor.
Yeah.
So, Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast. What do you think happens?
All right. So, I am making my guess and I know what the Never Beast looks like. It's, like, round and almost, like, white tiger stripey, but it's fluffier and it's got little horns. It's almost like a Gruffalo, but like on a snowier term to it. So I'm gonna go with it like being a winter, like it's almost like a Yeti kind of thing. And this pixie comes into the hollow and is like, oh man, I'm so lucky. Like I came out of the mountains and like avoided the beast, and they're all like, what are you talking about? And so she like tells them the story and they're like, you know what, we're gonna go find it. And then they go off on this expedition quest thing, and then they find him at the end, and he's actually nice and like helps them escape an avalanche and get them safely to like a base camp or whatever. Pixie hiking.
Okay, so it's like an expedition movie.
Yeah, but under the guise of like, you're wrong. I'm going to prove you wrong kind of thing.
Oh, like somebody doesn't believe it exists or there are different stories about it. Like some stories say that it's supernatural.
Yeah.
I guess they're in Pixie Hollow, so it's all supernatural.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. So like, but like some of them are like, I heard it's really dangerous. And like, it's almost like the Yeti from... or the Abominable Snowman from Monsters, Inc. tied in with, like, Marshmallow from Frozen, who's the really big snow monster. And then, like...
All right, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
So the drama is them traveling and them, like, arguing over what they're
going
to find when they get there.
Yeah.
I think that makes for a good setup for a story, considering this is a 76-minute movie.
Yeah.
And you got to have your like fun and games in Pixie Hollow before they set out. So I think, I mean, you got the main point, which is that the creature is not dangerous, but actually friendly.
Yeah.
Who could have guessed? So yeah, basically, there's no expedition. Basically, it's just kind of like they just exist. One of the fairies, pixies, whatever, spots this beast in a cave and. Another one researches it and finds out that it might be in this 1,000-year cycle where, like, the beast comes and messes everything up. But when they go investigate it, oh, no, at the last minute, like, it saved Tinkerbell from a falling tree. So maybe it's nice, but other people want to trap it. And then it gets caught in a trap. And then they rescue it from the trap. And then it was all a misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And the creature's name is Gruff. So your Gruffalo reference was a bit on the nose. And then, so there is a big storm. And so the Never Beast is like related to this storm, I guessed. But the beast is able to like redirect lightning and like absorb it.
Oh, cool.
And one of the pixies gets almost killed, but he is able to shock her back to life with the lightning that he absorbed.
Dang.
And then he helps them rebuild Pixie Hollow. So, like, his coming, the monster's coming coincides with the big storm, but they were able to get on his good side, I guess. And then he goes and hibernates. And they tell the story of the Never Beast. And that's the last Tinkerbell movie they ever made because the production house closed in 2018.
Yeah. Yep.
And this was the final feature from that Disney Toon Studios.
Yeah.
So I guess when I originally looked it up, I was like, I hope there's a lot of lore here that we're like not caught up on. But I think the thing with the Tinkerbell lore is that there's not any. There are characters.
Yeah, there's like the pirate.
And maybe these characters have their individual quirks, but I think it's intentionally not a lore-heavy thing because...
It's for kids.
From 2008 to 2015, this is aimed at five-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very young skewing.
It's kind of like what the knockoff Cars were. Like anything that wasn't Cars 1, 2, or 3.
Planes. Also a production of Disney Toon Studios.
I know, that's why I'm saying. But like, or the Mater's Tall Tales. Like anything that's not one of those, like also skewed younger than the original content did. Like, because Peter Pan is not five.
I think maybe the original Tinkerbell, they were like hoping for some broader appeal. But then, you know, when you're getting into four, five, and six sequels, like,
yeah,
you're just going for the lowest common denominator. And kind of like The Land Before Time. It's like, okay, these are just for literal children.
Yeah. This is not a family film. This is not.
This is throw it on the DVD player in the back of
the van.
SUV. Yeah. And hope it shuts up your kids on the car ride to grandma's house.
Yeah.
Well,
what a positive look we have on things.
I'm sure the artists who put in work on Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast really cared.
They're like a cool design, though. I will say their modernization designs actually kind of look cool.
Yeah. In a world of like cheap 3D animated.
In comparison to the Barbies, like...
Yeah, I think Disney luckily has the budget to be able to make it look nice, or at least put a little bit of pastiche on it so it looks cutesy.
Yeah.
If not cheap. All right. Well, so we haven't... I guess we maybe did, like, the direct-to-DVD sequels, like we mentioned them in the past before.
Yeah.
But the direct-to-DVD world of Disney, like, because it's outside of the realm of DCOM, we haven't talked about as much, so...
Yeah. I'm just a little more familiar with it because of me.
Yeah. But I wanted to hit that realm, and I figured the last of the Barry series would have been fun. Maybe there's a weirder one in there that we can find.
Ooh.
All right.
Until next time, you can find us on Instagram at Amateur Nerds.
Or me personally. Nope. We don't say that one anymore. Or on Tumblr at Wildcat Minute.
You can also send us an email to amateurnerdspresent@gmail.com.
Yeah, let us know who your favorite fairy is. Is it Vidia? Is it Fawn? Is it Nyx?
Is it Cosmo? Is it Wanda?
That's the wrong franchise, Condra.
Don't tell me how to live my life. Special thanks to our artist, Theo Golden, at TGoldenArt on Instagram.
And our musician, Joe Winslow, whom you can find at joewinslowmusic.com.
I have been Condra.
And I've been Tyler. We'll see you next time to find out if the world continues to spin right side up again or if it's going to stay upside down the whole time. You can bet on it.